Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 4, Chapter V1118, I believe. And here we go. "Dearest," said the little princess after breakfast on the morning of the 19th of March, and her downy little lip rose from old habit, but as sorrow was manifest in every smile, the sound of every word, and even every footstep in that house since the terrible news had come, so now the smile of the little princess, influenced by the general mood, though without knowing its cause, was such as to remind one still more of the general sorrow. "Dearest, I'm afraid this morning's Frühstück, as Foka the cook calls it, has disagreed with me." Frühstück means breakfast. "What is the matter with you, my darling? You look pale." "Oh, you are very pale," said Princess Mary in alarm, running with her soft, ponderous steps up to her sister-in-law. "Your Excellency, should not Mary Bogdanova be sent for?" said one of the maids, who was present. Mary Bogdanova was a midwife from the neighbouring town, who had been at Bald Hills for the last fortnight. "Oh, yes," assented Princess Mary. "Perhaps that's it. I'll go. Courage, my angel." She kissed Lisa and was about to leave the room. "Oh, no, no." And besides, the pallor and the physical suffering on the little princess's face, an expression of childish fear of inevitable pain showed itself. "No, it's only indigestion. Say it's only indigestion. Say so, Mary. Say..." And the little princess began to cry, capriciously, like a suffering child, and to wring her little hands, even with some affectation. Princess Mary ran out of the room to fetch Mary Bogdanova. "Mon Dieu, mon Dieu, oh," she heard as she left the room. The midwife was already on her way to meet her, rubbing her small plump white hands with an air of calm importance. "Mary Bogdanovna, I think it's beginning," said Princess Mary, looking at the midwife with wide-open eyes of alarm. "Well, the Lord be thanked, Princess," said Mary Bogdanovna, not hastening her steps. "You young ladies should not know anything about it yet." "But how is it the doctor from Moscow is not here yet?" said the princess, in accordance with Lisa's and Andrew's wishes. They had sent in good time to Moscow for a doctor, and were expecting him at any moment. "No matter, princess, don't be alarmed," said Mary Bogdanovna. "We'll manage very well without a doctor." 5 minutes later, Princess Mary, from her room, heard something heavy being carried by. She looked out. The men servants were carrying the large leather sofa from Prince Andrew's study into the bedroom. On their faces was a quiet and solemn look. Princess Mary sat alone in her room, listening to the sounds in the house, now and then opening her door when someone passed and watching what was going on in the passage. Some women, passing with quiet steps in and out of the bedroom, glanced at the princess and turned away. She did not venture to ask any questions, and shut the door again, now sitting down in her easy chair, now taking her prayer book, now kneeling before the icon stand. To her surprise and distress, she found that her prayers did not calm her excitement. Suddenly her door opened softly, and her old nurse, Praskovya Savishna, who hardly ever came to that room, as the old prince had forbidden it, appeared on the threshold with a shawl around her head. "I've come to sit with you a bit, Masha," said the nurse, "and here I've brought the prince's wedding candles to light before his saint, my angel," she said with a sigh. "Oh, nurse, I'm so glad. God is merciful, Bertie." The nurse lit the gilt candles before the icons and sat down by the door with her knitting. Princess Mary took a book and began reading. Only when footsteps or voices were heard did they look at one another, the princesses anxious and inquiring, the nurse encouraging. Everyone in the house was dominated by the same feeling that Princess Mary experienced as she sat in her room, but owing to the superstition that the fewer the people who know of it, the less a woman in travail suffers, everyone tried to pretend not to know. No one spoke of it, but apart from the ordinary staid and respectful good manners habitual in the prince's household, a common anxiety, a softening of the heart, and a consciousness that something great and mysterious was being accomplished at that moment made itself felt. There was no laughter in the maid's large hall. In the manservant's hall, all sat waiting, silently and alert. In the outlying serfs' quarters, torches and candles were burning, and no one slept. The old prince, stepping on his heels, paced up and down his study and sent Tikhon to ask Mary Bogdanovna what news. "Say only that the prince told me to ask, and come and tell me her answer." "Inform the prince that labour has begun," said Mary Bogdanovna, giving the messenger a significant look. Tikhon went and told the prince. "Very good," said the prince, closing the door behind him, and Tikhon did not hear the slightest sound from the study after that. After a while he re-entered it, as if to snuff the candles, and seeing that the prince was lying on the sofa, looked at him, noticed his perturbed face, shook his head, and going up to him, silently kissed him on the shoulder and left the room without snuffing the candles or saying why he had entered. The most solemn mystery in the world continued its course. Evening passed, night came, and the feeling of suspense and softening of heart in the presence of the unfathomable did not lessen but increased. No one slept. It was one of those March nights when winter seems to wish to resume its sway and scatters its last snows and storms with desperate fury. A relay of horses had been sent up the high road to meet the German doctor from Moscow, who was expected every moment, and men on horseback with lanterns were sent to the crossroads to guide him over the country road with its hollows and snow-covered pools of water. Princess Mary had long since put aside her book. She sat silent, her luminous eyes fixed on her nurse's wrinkled face, every line of which she knew so well. On the lock of grey hair that escaped from under her kerchief, and the loose skin that hung under her chin. Nurse Savishna, knitting in hand, was telling in low tones, scarcely hearing or understanding her own words, what she had told hundreds of times before, how the late princess had given birth to Princess Mary in Kishinev, with only a Moldavian peasant woman to help instead of a midwife. "God is merciful. Doctors are never needed," she said. Suddenly a gust of wind beat violently against the casement of the window from which the double frame had been removed by order of the prince. One window frame was removed in each room as soon as the larks returned, and forcing open a loosely closed latch, set the damask curtain flapping and blew out the candle with its chill, snowy draught. The footnote here says Russian houses have double windows in winter. As this hinders ventilation, it is well to have one of the two frames removed as soon as the weather is mild enough. Princess Mary shuddered. Her nurse, putting down the stocking she was knitting, went to the window and, leaning out, tried to catch the open casement. The cold wind flapped the ends of her kerchief and her loose locks of grey hair. "Princess, my dear, there's someone driving up the avenue," she said, holding the casement and not closing it, "with lanterns, most likely the doctor." "Oh, my God, thank God," said Princess Mary. "I must go and meet him. He does not know Russian." Princess Mary threw a shawl over her head and ran to meet the newcomer. As she was crossing the anteroom, she saw through the window a carriage with lanterns standing at the entrance. She went out on the stairs. On a banister post stood a tallow candle, which guttered in the draught. On the landing below, Philip the footman stood looking scared and holding another candle. Still lower, beyond the turn of the staircase, one could hear the footsteps of someone in thick felt boots, and a voice that seemed familiar to Princess Mary. was saying something. "Thank God," said the voice. "And father?" "Gone to bed," replied the voice of Demyan, the house steward, who was downstairs. Then the voice said something more. Demyan replied, and the steps in the felt boots approached the unseen bend of the staircase more rapidly. "It's Andrew," thought Princess Mary. "No, it can't be. That would be too extraordinary." And at the very moment she thought this, the face and figure of Prince Andrew, in a fur cloak, the deep collar of which was covered with snow, appeared on the landing where the footman stood with the candle. Yes, it was he, pale, thin, with a changed and strangely softened but agitated expression on his face. He came up the stairs and embraced his sister. "You did not get my letter?" he asked, and not waiting for a reply, which he would not have received, for the princess was unable to speak, he turned back, rapidly mounted the stairs again, with the doctor who had entered the hall after him. They had met at the last post station, and again embraced his sister. "What a strange fate, Masha, darling." And having taken off his cloak and felt boots, he went to the little princess's apartment. All right, there we have it. Another chapter down, and Prince Andrew has returned from the dead. Hooray. Although, you know, I just felt underwhelmed by that return. I mean, on one hand, I'm really happy that he's come back at this moment, just in the nick of time to witness the birth of his son. But I think I'm just sharing in... This chapter did a great job of building that feeling of nervous anticipation. And the whole household, you know, the family and the servants and everyone are all nervously waiting to find out what's going on in that room. And it did a good job of conveying that feeling, because that's what I'm left with. I'm happy that Andrew's back, but at the same time, I just feel like I'm in the waiting room of a hospital waiting to hear news. There was a few comparisons in the comments today about A Song of Ice and Fire, especially with Andre's return and the wind blowing open the window and blowing out the candle, and they go to close the window, and outside they, you know, they see a carriage approaching, and it's the triumphant return of Prince Andrew. It was a very dramatic entrance. But like I said, I was underwhelmed by it. I don't know why. I can't put my finger on why. I think it's just because I'm anxious about what's going to happen with this childbirth. There wasn't the feeling of joy. There was still the feeling of just anxiety, this kind of foreshadowing of something. You'd think, you know, the father arriving home just in time to witness the birth of his child would be really, really, I don't know, a joyful experience, but all I'm feeling is like I want to read the next chapter to see how the childbirth goes. Who Was Once Delight asked the question, "This chapter deals mostly with the families waiting through Lisa's labour. What does this chapter show about how childbirth was treated among the aristocracy at this time? What do you think of the belief that the less people know about the suffering of a woman in labour, the less she suffers?" You know, I think that question, that last bit, is the bit that gives me anxiety, is like we're not allowed in the room to see how the labour goes. We just have to wait and find out what happened. Libby Stitch responded, "I massively sympathise with that sentiment. My labour with my first child lasted 5 days. Really just a very drawn-out induction where I was rapidly approaching 3 weeks overdue with not a lot happening, and they gave up and gave me a C-section in the end anyway. We deliberately didn't tell the waiting grandparents that I'd gone into the hospital because it would have made an already stressful and annoying experience even worse through constant checks and phone calls." JMama8779 said, "My goodness, our labour was a couple of days and that was nerve-wracking enough. I couldn't imagine 5. I can totally sympathise with not telling the grandparents in your case, as well as the lack of updates in this chapter." Yeah, we're just a bunch of nervous people waiting in the waiting room right now. You know, we don't want to interrupt. We want to let the doctor do his thing, let the midwife take care of it. All right, let's put a pin in it for today, and we'll come back tomorrow for the next chapter. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.